Kyan Brussel, who is the daughter of the late Mae Brussel, the woman from whose estate the Mae Brussel Research Center got going. Now, it should be noted that Kyan Brussel was the individual in charge of the Mae Brussel Research Center for the Brussel family, for the Brussel estate. She was pivotally involved in all of the machinations, one way or another, vis-a-vis the Mae Brussel Center, and as I've indicated, was the person who was in charge of the Mae Brussel Research Center for the Brussel family, although John was the technical curator. It should be noted, too, for the purposes of record, that at all times the library and May's files were and still are part of the Mae Brussel estate. They were never and are not the property of John Judge. He was simply set up as the curator for the center. Hello, Kyan, can you hear me?
Yes.
All righty, what I would like to do, Kyan, since you were front and center with what happened with the Mae Brussel Research Center, I would like you to give your account of what happened with the center after I read you the account that exists in Vanken's book. For every Dave Emery Brussel inspired, every independent researcher, she had a gaggle of slavish devotees. These were disciples, some straight from the bug-eyed and stringy-haired school that also seems to spawn Lyndon LaRouche's lower-level foot soldiers. To encourage a healthier legacy, on her deathbed, she authorized that a research center be created in her name, donating her overstuffed files and plenary political library. Now, first of all, Kyan, I wondered, did Jonathan Vanken or his close professional cohort, John Whalen, ever contact you or attempt to interview you about the Mae Brussel Center?
No.
They never contacted you?
No, they never left a message on my machine. They never made any effort to call me.
Well, simply from a journalistic standpoint, if Vanken were going to write about this controversy, he should have taken the time to do field research, which he apparently did not. Now, Kyan, what is your account? What is your impression? What were your experiences of the rise and fall of the Mae Brussel Research Center and why it collapsed?
The string of problems were all related to John's behaviors and chiseling down of trust amongst his coworkers and myself. His actions tended to be suspicious and odd given the nature of the work he was doing and given what I believe to be his place in my mother's life and in my own life. The first suspicious thing that happened was that John wouldn't give Tom Davis the house key when he went back east. And Tom was running the center with John at that point. He was closely involved. He had helped make the move and really set up the place. And John was acting suspicious towards Tom and showing a lack of trust in that direction and had arranged for his own people to stay there, some friends he knew, to house sit while he was gone. And that was odd to everybody.
I would interject at this point, Kyan, that Tom Davis, by the way, was a very close friend of Mae Brussel's. He also runs the book service mentioned in Vanken's book called Tom Davis Books. I would also interject that the same account of John's refusing to let Tom Davis have a key was provided to me not only by Tom Davis, but also by other people involved with the center.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Kyan. What else do you feel the audience should know?
Well, John and Tom got into a conflict when John refused to unpack May's books. The place was supposed to be set up as a research center to be utilized and accessible to people. And John absolutely refused to put the books on the shelf or to set it up or make it and make the information available. Well, Tom stepped in with Will in the fall of 88 and began to unpack the books to set them out. And John became furious and at that point changed the locks. And Tom stepped out as a board of directors. He didn't want to get into conflict with John and would rather distance himself and, as he said, help from the sidelines. But when these suspicious things came up, Tom failed to confront John directly or get to the bottom of this of these bizarre actions. He failed to question John's motives. He just sort of saw it as an oddity of John's character and preferred to not make waves at the expense of looking into what was really going on.
Now, how specifically, now you said that Tom Davis and Will, by the way, I assume refers to a fellow named Will Robinson, the air name of a fellow who does a program on KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, which was May's home base station during her life. That program was called the Lighthouse Report. How did John Judge react when Tom Davis and Will Robinson attempted to unpack May's books?
Oh, he was furious. He was absolutely furious. And they had, he had the rocks taped. He didn't want them to come near, and he wanted to maintain a tighter grip of the collection and a tighter control of the situation. He became very possessive
mm-hmm.
of the collection and felt it was more his right to decide how it was managed and what was done with it.
Was any explanation ever given to you or anyone that you know about why John did not want to unpack May's books?
John would just say he wasn't ready and that he didn't feel safe, and yet he created a double standard of who could come in and who was safe and suspicious. There was no collective means of deciding how to allow or who to allow in to use the material. John used suspiciousness as his blanket to exclude anybody he wanted, and meanwhile would include people who the others didn't necessarily feel secure with.
All righty. Now, one thing I would note for the record, and this was also provided to me by Tom Davis, specifically in a dinner gathering that I had with him at the Curry Village restaurant on Sunnyvale Saratoga Road in Cupertino in late November of 1988. I would also note that this particular meeting, which I will allude to later in my own discussion, was also attended by my attorney. So counsel was witness to this particular discussion. Tom Davis told me, Cayenne, at that time, that because of John's reaction when he attempted to unpack the books, he himself declined to become involved with the center as a member of the board of directors, which I believe he was planning on doing.
That's right.
So it was at this juncture that Tom Davis himself concluded that he could no longer work closely with John Judge.
Yes, and he took distance from him, yet he failed to inquire or pursue the issue as to what was going on with John.
Well, we'll talk about Tom Davis, and I want to get your reaction to Tom Davis's comments later on. One question I do have, Cayenne, it was my impression from talking to people in the center that John changed the locks on the center later after most of the volunteers had quit. Now, was it then, or are you saying that happened after Will and Tom Davis attempted to unpack May's books and John basically had a temper tantrum?
Maybe it was after John had a temper tantrum that he asked them for their keys back. I think he changed the locks later, but the keys came up as an issue at that time. And rather than explore why the books weren't out further, John chose to withdraw from both Will and Tom, who were close friends of his as well as May's.
Okay, but what you're saying now is that in addition to not allowing Tom to keep his key while he was back east, John deprived Tom of his key at this point.
I believe so.
Okay.
I believe so. I can't say for sure, but I remember that the issue came up then around security and keys and controlling the situation.
It should be noted, too, that we are recording this in early December of 1991. The events in question stretch over a period of time from 1988, specifically September, when Mae Brussell was diagnosed as having terminal cancer, going up through December and January of 1989, when the center formally went belly up. So there certainly will be areas that are not absolutely clear to the people who were involved, and that should be taken into account. Now, after John Judge refused to unpack May's books, and after he became extremely angry with both Tom Davis and Will Robinson, and again, that account was provided to me also by Tom Davis and Will Robinson independently. What happened after that, Cayenne?
Well, there was that time where we were trying to set up more communication between you and John.
Okay, and I would interject that at this point, John and I were already at loggerheads. After hearing from the people involved with the center, I'm going to give my own account of what transpired.
You invited John on the air at that point. Is that correct?
Specifically, on the evening of Sunday, October 9th, 1988, that was the Sunday after the Friday on which May's funeral was held, I had John on as a guest during the phone-in session of the One Step Beyond show that I was doing as a tribute to May Brussel. And on that evening, again, October 9th, 1988, I offered John the opportunity to be my co-host. Now, going back again to November of 88 and the attempted resolution of this conflict, and I specifically remember this date off the top of my head. Some of the dates of some of the events I cannot remember, but this one I remember very specifically. It was the evening of Friday, November 11th of 1988, and there was to be a dinner. I've forgotten where the dinner was going to be held, Kyan. Was it at the center?
It was in Santa Cruz at a different place, at Karen's house.
Oh, it was going to be at Karen's house. Okay, because I don't remember where it was going to be held, but there was to be a gathering of some of the people involved, and we were going to basically smooth out the differences between John Judge and myself. And again, I will go into those later on. What do you recollect about this particular gathering, Cayenne?
Well, that there was some people that you wanted into the question about John's history, and he refused to allow them to come if he was going to attend. I remember that. And that it was disappointing that it didn't happen.
One of the things that I was looking to do at this particular gathering was to have some people on, or at the gathering, I'm so used to being on the air, have people at the gathering who could speak independently about some of the things that John was doing about which I had misgivings. The reason I wanted these people there was because, frankly, it was the opinion at this time of most of the people I spoke to, Kyan, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, this was also your opinion, that the differences between John and myself were simply a personality conflict. And beyond that, my impression was that people were sort of viewing it as my fault. They were viewing the personality conflict as Dave Emery being difficult. And I wanted these people to give their accounts precisely so people could hear from someone else what was going on, and it would become clear for the purposes of factual clarity as well as eventual resolution of the conflict that this was not simply a function or even primarily a function of my own personality, although I did have my differences with John. John did not want these people and would not allow them to attend the function. Now, I seem to recall, Cayenne, and here again, this may be one of the areas where the passage of time has eroded memory, and although I have a very good memory, I do forget things myself. But the explanation that was given to me for these people not being allowed at this gathering was that John wanted to preserve the security of the May Brussel Research Center. He didn't want people knowing where the center was. That is why I thought the gathering was going to be at the center.
Uh-huh.
But that was the explanation, at any rate, that John gave for not having these people there. It was in the interest of preserving the security about the location of the May Brussel Center, which, if your recollection is correct, is odd, since this was going to be at Karen's house. By the way, Karen is a friend of Cayenne's and a member of the board of directors of the former May Brussel Research Center. Her name is Karen Gutt, and I will be interviewing her also later on in this broadcast.
She was also a close friend of May's.
And a close friend of May's as
met
well.
Met through May, actually.
Oh, you met Karen through May?
Yes.
Okay. But it's worth noting that John Judge refused to allow these people at this particular gathering. One of the people who was going to be coming with me was my good friend and attorney, and upon the advice of counsel, I did not attend that meeting because, in the opinion of counsel, it simply would not be an adequate situation for the correcting of the record without these people there. But again, on November 11th of 1988, there was an attempt to smooth over the differences between John and myself. I wanted other people there to bear witness to some of the things that John had been doing. John would not allow them there, and on the advice of counsel, I did not attend this meeting. And again, I will note for the record that on October 9th of 1988, I offered John the position of being my co-host on One Step Beyond, my weekly radio show, in order to prevent this conflict and also to try and get John to upgrade the quality of his own research. And I would also interject that at this time that this was a person who at this point I neither liked nor respected nor trusted, yet I attempted to smooth over the differences. So after this particular gathering, Cayenne, what do you recall, what else comes to mind about what happened with the Mae Brussell Center? Now, by the way, we're now in November of 1988.
Well, one of the most significant things I remember, which happened later, was that the volunteers all started to complain to me. They had a series of complaints about working with John and about the integrity of his character and how uncomfortable it was beginning to be to work there with him. That they claimed to me that they were doing a lot of work and that he was essentially doing nothing, and yet when people would come to the house, he would show them the work that was done and claim it as his own, claim credit. And he would stay on the phone all night running up big phone bills, and then in the morning when he was exhausted would explain that he had been working all night. And they began to be appalled because many of them, or several of them, had known him before as a friend, and it started to confuse them based on their own impressions, their previous impressions of John and of his work. I know that one woman who was volunteering to come in and do mailings and do what she could was outraged when John asked her to clean the bathroom and scrub the toilets and felt this was a very sexist, offensive gesture to make when she was coming to do serious research and to volunteer towards the center and not clean his toilet. And
do you recall this volunteer's name offhand, Cayenne?
This was Betty, I believe.
What was her name?
Betty.
Betty. All righty. I would also interject at this point that not having been involved with the Mae Brussell Research Center except for donating money and promoting a fundraising function, and I will talk about my own dealings with John and the center later, the conflict that took place with the volunteers, I have only heard third person. I have heard it from some of the volunteers about what happened, but this is an area which I do not really understand past a point, so I cannot pass judgment, no pun intended, on the accounts given me, but I do think it is important to hear about the conflicts between John and many of the volunteers, because that's eventually led to the resignation of most of the volunteers. What else comes to mind, Cayenne, about the conflicts between the volunteers? And I will be interviewing some of them myself later to get their accounts.
Well, I remember that John wouldn't let them have the mail key, that he had total control of the mailbox, and errands and things that they would do to go out and save energy, John would double over. You know, they'd go out and do a mailing at the post office, and yet he wouldn't let them pick up the mail and bring it home. I remember them telling me that there was a series of lies that they were catching John in, and at the time it was hard to believe. I didn't want to doubt them because several people were coming to me, and yet it was hard to believe given who John was and wanting to trust him as he was in this position and as my mother had on some level trusted him with managing the library. The volunteers also heard him say on several accounts and refer to her collection as his own. And, of course, when I confronted him with that, he denied it. But that started to make me feel uncomfortable, that he would refer to the library as his own, and if they didn't like it, they could leave, and that this operation was his, and he could do with it as he pleased, essentially. As I said, I didn't want to believe the extent or that he was even participating in lying, but I heard from Tom and from Will that John was complaining that our family had given no money to the center and showed no support. And at that time, I believe I had given $3,000 so far to the center. This was, you know, this was by the fall of 89, 1 year after. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, I have the check receipts to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was saying that we who were showing no support felt horrible. And it was as if, well, I felt like he was trying to stir up some trouble between myself and Tom Davis. And I felt that on several occasions, John played people against each other.
All righty. Now, I would also reiterate that I myself was not involved in any direct fashion with the center, so I'm not in a position to independently verify the allegations that are made by the various volunteers. But it is your contention, Cayenne, that John was deliberately deceiving people with regard to a number of different things.
Yes, and I didn't believe that at first, and I didn't want to believe it, but that is my opinion now.
All right, and we will hear from some of the other volunteers later. Now, I was told by many of the volunteers who quit that they simply found John impossible to work with. Or is it your understanding that the various conflicts and machinations that you have spoken about were the reasons why most of the volunteers quit in the fall of 1989?
Yes. They cared a lot about the center, and they pleaded to find some way to carry on without John Judge, and expressed their willingness to continue to work and do what they could, but that it was impossible for them to work with John.
Now, my recollection, Cayenne, and this, we're now in the fall of 1989. Do you recall which month it was that most of the volunteers quit?
I think it was November.
November.
I remember it, yes.
Okay. My recollection, and I'm going to see if perhaps I can get Tom Davis's input on this, but my recollection was that the locks were changed on the center at around this time. Is that your recollection?
Yeah, well, I think the volunteers quit.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, Tom and Will were also scared and had some doubts about John, and they removed the core parts of May's files. They took them out. They didn't feel that they were safe there. And at that point, I believe that's when John changed the locks.
That's my recollection, too. But again, we're operating in the distance of several years. And while some of these events and the exact dates are etched in stone in my memory, there are some things that I am not totally clear on myself. And there are many aspects of the center about which I knew nothing except third-hand accounts. So now, the same account was given to me by Tom Davis, of Tom Davis Books, and Will Robinson of KAZU-FM about removing the core of May's library from the center at this time. I know they told me they didn't trust John, but they never, to my recollection, were explicit about why. Did they ever explain to you, Cayenne, or to anyone you know about why they removed the files?
Well, John was acting suspiciously in these different ways that I've expressed, and the volunteers, I know, were complaining to them as well. And I imagine that their own suspicions were aroused.
Well, that it is interesting, and now it is your understanding, and it is also my recollection, that it was after Tom Davis and Will Robinson removed the core of May's files because they didn't trust John, that John changed the locks on the center, because earlier you said it was after Tom and Will attempted to unpack May's books.
Right, no, I think that's when he took the keys back.
Okay.
Yeah.
All righty. What else happened with the center? And by the way, we are now in the fall of 1989, according to Cayenne's recollection. November of 1989, some 14 months after May died, or actually 13 months after May died, 14 months after the center got going, because it was actually initiated while May was on her deathbed.
Well, John never incorporated the center as an independent identity. He began the process, but he never followed it through with any energy or fervor. The umbrella organization, the fiscal sponsor that was protecting the center and making it safe for nonprofit tax-deductible donations, requested that John give them a book of the records of all the money earned for their own tax purposes, which John never did. He promised that he would, and they needed these records. And John just, he never followed through on that. And no financial records were kept until the very end and closing of the center. He wrote checks, but the money that came in weren't recorded against what was being spent. Some things were recorded, some were not, and it was just a lot of financial sloppiness around which the volunteers, I believe, were also kept from that area. They, you know, the volunteers were allowed to do very specific jobs that John designated, and beyond which he kept a lot of areas split off or secret or separate. The financial dealings were one of them. We had a very small board, and John wanted it that way. There was only himself, myself, and one other fellow named Dave. And every time I spoke of increasing the board, John and Dave would shy away from the idea. John would shy away, and Dave would back up John. And I felt like I'd had very limited control or power or influence over the decisions made because there was three of us, and Dave would vote consistently with John. And so any suggestion I made would get swept aside or pushed under, and I felt I needed more support.
In other words, what you're saying, Cayenne, is that basically the board was composed of three people, and it was two against one as far as you were concerned.
Yes,
now,
that's right.
Let me go back over some of the things that you said and see if I'm understanding you correctly. You're maintaining that the nonprofit organization, which, as I recall, was an anti-nuke group, is that correct? That this organization was never provided with a full financial accounting of the monies that had been donated to the Mae Russell Center. It should be noted that people giving money to the Mae Russell Center were donating through this nonprofit organization. Now, it is your contention, your recollection, that no financial accounting was ever provided to this organization?
That's right.
And had there been an agreement to do so?
Yes.
Now, one of the things that I remember very specifically about the Mae Russell Center is that it was advertised in its literature and solicitations were done specifically referring to the Mae Russell Center as a nonprofit organization, and the donations were represented as being tax deductible.
That can be done as long as there is a fiscal sponsor,
mm-hmm.
which there was.